Hello and welcome to episode 5 of A Life in the Landscape, an occasional podcast with me, Peter Cox, and my good friend.
Me.
Oh, that's me.
That's you.
Yes. You, Mr. Q, Roger.
Good friend. Roger Overall. Yes. Hello, Peter.
We're getting more professional as time goes on.
Yes, who I now have to upgrade to good friend as well. Because you know how awkward that is if you're just a friend and somebody calls you a good friend and then, you know, that hangs.
No, don't feel like you're being pressured into it, that you have to say it before you're ready to.
Before I'm ready to, yes. Well, it's a big commitment. Now, before we descend into just complete nonsense.
Too late.
Yes, true. Where have you been? You're just back. And can I just say, you do not look burned.
I'm not burned. I've managed now twice this year to go to very sunny places and not come away completely sunburned. On the one occasion, it was in the Atacama in Chile, and I evaded sunburn by diligently applying sunscreen and being very careful.
And practically wearing a tent over yourself.
Pretty much, yes. In fact, I wore something that would not have been terribly out of place if I was a woman in the place that I've just come back from, which is Dubai. And there I'd avoided sunburn by diligently staying inside in a conference room for most of the time that I was there.
So what were you doing in Dubai?
I was actually attending a lecture or a seminar on some post-processing techniques. So it's one of the areas of my photography that I've always felt I could do a little bit better on and learn some additional things. And it's over the years, I never got around to doing something. But then I saw this particular seminar and I decided that I would go for it. Plus, it was an excuse to go to Dubai.
What are you? Are you from the era of the darkroom?
No, I'm not. I've never actually developed a photograph in the darkroom. I would love to. And in fact, when Liam is... I keep saying when he's older, but he's actually at an age now, this is my son, when he's 7, and he's probably just about old enough to introduce him to the darkroom. And I would love myself, because I've never, ever had that magic of putting the print in the bath and see it come up like magic. And I think that he would get a great kick out of that.
Yeah, it's a big pain in the hole, quite frankly, compared to
having
done both. And people say, oh, there's the magic of the image rising up out of the... And I often thought it's not so much the magic of the image, it's the sheer relief that you haven't exposed the reverse side of the picture of the paper or the negative. Actually, the negative is strong enough because you can have a thin negative. And funny thing about what was known as a thin negative, you hold it up to the light, it becomes positive. Very peculiar stuff. The smell of the chemicals on your hands, the guilt of when you throw the chemicals away. Because, you know, back in the day, I mean, look, I'm much older than Peter. So I have worked in a dark room, and these chemicals going down the drain, it's much more refined to sit at your desk with a lovely screen and a cup of tea.
I find that you're probably right, but I think I owe it to myself that I don't think you can really properly call yourself a photographer and not have done that. Now, in 10, 15 years' time, 20 years' time, when it's very much a thing that was in the past, unless, of course, it makes a comeback like vinyl, perhaps it will cease to be a necessary rite of passage.
Look, we've already lost half our audience. Just they're listening to this and they're thinking, paper? What's this paper you're talking about? Photographs? On the screen, negatives? Surely. Yes. Yeah, negative.
It's all very strange.
So you went to... Now, I'm curious, because you went to Dubai. You are sitting in a workshop as a participant, as a student almost. So you're on the opposite side of where you normally are. Because you give workshops.
Yes.
People take a knee and sit at your knee normally. And here you are. So how was that switch for? It must have been a bit of a culture shock.
It was a bit strange, I have to say. And, you know, my philosophy with life in general is that learning is something that you do all the time. And you know, I'm always finding out new things to do, and whether it's related to photography or something else, I like to learn new things. And as I said, you know, post-processing is an area that I do lecture on, and I give talks about sort of the kind of post-processing that I do, which is very minimal and gets the image kind of to where it was, the way that I remembered the scene being. But there are some techniques that I, you know, in terms of advanced Photoshop techniques that I never really got into. And most of my lecturing on my the teaching that I do on post-processing is on a very technical level. And so this was something that was more on an artistic or an aesthetic level that I was attending. So it was quite interesting, but it was very strange to be sitting there and being lectured to by somebody that would be my peer, and I haven't really done that before. So it was quite interesting to be on the other side. It was actually really nice to be able to just sit back and not have to worry about what am I going to say next, or you know, is everybody taking in what I'm saying? Are the people understanding me? I was able to just sit back and take it in and kind of relax. It was almost like being on holiday.
Is that person at the back who's eyeing me, about to ask me a question I cannot answer?
Yes, exactly. I'm not worried. Is somebody going to start snoring? Because in fact, I arrived incredibly jet lagged. I really wanted to keep the trip as short as possible because I just have a lot of travel going on this year. And this particular trip, I didn't want to extend very much. And I was too aggressive with the timing. So the thing started on a Saturday morning at 8 o'clock or 8:30, I think. I arrived in Dubai at 1 o'clock in the morning. I didn't get to bed and to sleep until about 3:30, and that I didn't sleep terribly well. And so I spent the entire first morning in a fog. I didn't go to lunch. I went to my room to sleep for an hour. So in fact, if somebody was going to be snoring during the workshop, it was going to be me.
Now, you have given workshops where part of the workshop has been to do post-production.
Yeah.
I know this because I've photographed you, but doing that. But here's the thing. I met a listener the other day. I met a listener on a shoot, me. So I was out on a commercial shoot and it was a series of portraits. And one of the guys walked in and he knew who I was. And he asked, and he said, I listened to the podcast. Now
you do a lot of podcasts. So.
Yeah, I play the field basically.
We never discussed that this would be an open relationship, Roger.
So initially, I said to him, which podcast? He said the photography podcast, and then I thought, well,
which
okay,
photography podcast?
Because Peter and I used to do with Neil McShane, we used to do the Circle of Confusion. Is that the one you mean? No, Peter's podcast. So we have a listener. So a shout out, and please God, I hope I remember the name correctly. Kevin Mee was, I hope. Sorry, Kevin, if you're listening to this and you know it's you and your name isn't Kevin or Kevin Mee, I do apologize. I have the worst memory on the planet, but we have a listener. So thank you very much for making yourself known.
Absolutely. Thank you,
Kevin.
Brave
thing to do.
Yes.
Anyway, so you went to Dubai to see it in a hotel room.
Yes.
Was it a nice hotel room?
It was actually a very nice hotel room. It was up on the 57th floor of what is, I learned after I arrived, the tallest hotel in the world. There are hotels in taller buildings. In fact, there's a hotel in the Burj Khalifa, which is the tallest building in the world. But this is the tallest sole use hotel. So I was up on the 57th floor, so I had a wonderful view of the construction project that is Dubai. It's an amazing city. It's also very different, as we've discussed in this podcast. I only go to cold places that are wet, so this is the very opposite of that. But I did go in the winter, so it was a mere 23 degrees, which was very pleasant, instead of the 50 degrees that it can be in the summertime.
And also, typically, you photograph, if you do photograph buildings, they've been around for 1,000 years.
Yes.
Here's a place, you'd go to sleep and you'd wake up next morning and there'd be a new bit of the city finished.
Pretty much.
Can you imagine printing the map of Dubai? It's basically out of date as soon as it rolls off the presses.
But the funny thing is, though, you can make a photograph of Dubai and 3 years later, it's a historical document because the city has changed totally. There's 10 more buildings and the three of the ones that you photographed have been torn down to be replaced.
Exactly. Because the owner, I didn't like it. No, it was just slightly. It was supposed to be 3 inches to the left, and they just screwed up.
It's not that far off of that. I mean, really, it's buildings that have only been up for 10 years get torn down and replaced because they just want to put something different up. It's incredible.
It really is.
I mean, the 10 years I'm pulling out of something smelly, but it's not far off of that.
Did you do any? Did you see anything of Dubai? Did you take any pictures?
I did take some pictures. I went up and I did the touristy thing and I went up to the top of the Burj Khalifa. This is the very tall needle-like building that is currently the tallest building in the world. It's 818 meters tall, which is ludicrous. Although nearly half of that height is just basically there to be tall. There's no actual habitation. So you could knock nearly half the height of the building off and it would still not change its function in any way. But you can get nearer to the top of the highest inhabited floor. They have an observation deck there. So I did that touristy thing just to say that I'd done it. But photographically, it wasn't that interesting. But I was very lucky to experience a phenomenon that is rare in Dubai. I've been told it occurs only about 10 days in a year. It only happens in the winter time, and the time of year that I went over is kind of past the prime of the season. But you can get fog that comes in off of the Gulf, and it can actually be quite thick and quite high. In fact, it can be so high that if you're below floor 40 on a building, you just see white. But if you're higher than that, and thankfully there are lots of buildings that are higher than that in Dubai, you can see it. The problem was I hadn't really planned what I would do if I was lucky enough to get that. So the hotel where I was staying at, I couldn't get access to the roof. I asked really nicely. Basically, the last morning that I was there, I woke up early because I thought there might be a chance for fog. The humidity was quite high. And I looked out and I saw that the fog was starting to form out of my window. So first I thought, well, maybe if I close the curtains behind me, I can get the camera with black background behind it so there'd be no reflections. But unfortunately, being Dubai, with sandstorms and so on, there's a lot of grit on the windows, so that a long exposure just didn't work. The grit catches too much of the light from the city and it looks terrible. So then I rang the front desk and I said, pretty, 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 pretty please, can I please, please, please get up onto the roof? And they said no, which I can't really blame them for. They didn't have an outdoor observation deck of any kind in the hotel. So then I did some frantic Googling to find out where previous people had gone to take photographs like this. And there was basically there was one place where you had a chance if you hadn't really contacted in advance. And that was a hotel called the Shangri-La, which has an observation deck on its 42nd floor. So I rang them and I said, look, and it said, by the way, you have to be a guest of the hotel, which I wasn't. So I rang them and I said, look, I'm a photographer. I see this fog forming. Is there any way that I can get up onto the observation deck? And they said, actually, yeah, if you show up and you pay 250 dirham, which would be about 50 euro, then you can go up. And I said, fantastic. So I went down and actually bumped into down at the lobby of the hotel I was staying in, and I bumped into two of the other photographers that were on the workshop that I was on. Who were also going to the Shangri-La, and they had been there the week before. So they basically were able to blag their way up to the top without having to pay the fee, which was very nice. So we all three of us went up to the top, and there were a couple of other photographers up there as well. And it was absolutely amazing. I mean, that morning alone made the whole trip worthwhile. I really, really enjoyed. It's just, you know, we got there before sunrise, just about 10 minutes before sunrise. Fog was starting to roll in, and just an amazing experience to be there and then to photograph it even as it, and you know, it stayed photographable for a much longer time than I would have thought, because with my experience in the Atacama Desert, right as soon as the sun comes up, that's it, game over. But it shows the difference between high altitude, very arid climate, which is the Atacama, against a sea level, and even though it's a desert, at that particular morning it was quite humid environment, and how much softening that gives to the light. So even when the sun was actually up fairly high in the sky, the photograph that I chose to publish is one with the sun. It's probably 20 minutes after sunrise. It was my favorite of the bunch, because you see the sun, you see the shadows cast by it because you're looking into the sun, and you have the wonderful eerie effect of the fog.
Any plans to go back? Any plans to actually go into the desert?
I would love to. The dunes there, you know, it's right there by the Empty Quarter, which is famously the part of that part of the world that is just full of sand dunes, massive sand dunes. And I've seen photographs from there. I would love to go. There was an opportunity to go, but I again cut the trip very short. So I left after just 3 days and didn't have that chance. However, I did meet a local photographer there. It was nice to make that local contact. And I would like to go back and do at least do some shooting for myself, and then perhaps even if I think it's worthy and people would be interested, in a few years I might run a trip there, because it is really quite stunning. The city itself is nice. But I think that the dunes, you know, in the right conditions can be absolutely stunning.
And you haven't been converted into an architectural photographer by your visit?
No, I've always enjoyed architectural photography, but I've never made it as a, it's never been a thing that I've done really. But I did actually bump into Gerry O'Leary, who's the Irish architectural photographer that lives there. And he, in fact, very generously on the first night that I was there, despite my incredible jet lag, he took me out and showed me around the town a little bit. And we had a good couple of drinks and a nice meal together. So yeah. If you're listening, Gerry, thanks very much for that.
So Dubai, that's one thing. You've done that. You're back. As I say, you're not sunburned. Well, then, you know, as you say, you're indoors most of the time. What else have you... Well, we mentioned Chile. We should at this point, as we've mentioned Chile, we need to do where are Peter's drone batteries?
Currently, they're in New York.
So just to give the backstory to listeners, Peter went to Chile in Atacama Desert, as you've heard, sometime in the last century. No, it's not true. Last year.
August
last year. He took a drone. You took your drone and you needed to ship your batteries out there. The batteries did arrive.
Too late to actually participate in the shoot.
So absolutely useless, in other words. Yes. And they have since August been making their way back to you.
For most of the time, they've been sitting in a warehouse somewhere. And because I shipped them from the Atacama Desert back to Santiago, which is the capital of Chile. And then they sat in a warehouse there for a long time before they were shipped by sea to New York. And they've been in New York for a while now, waiting for it to be arrangements to be made to get them back to Europe. And basically phase one, the camera company I was doing work with in the Atacama Desert, we did a shoot with the pre-production at the time, Trichromatic back, which was amazing. And they gave some incredible support for the project, including actually shipping the batteries over at considerable expense. And they have also been in charge of shipping them back. And it's just been an absolute nightmare. And they have been incredible with all the time and effort and money that they've put into getting these batteries back to me. I'm incredibly grateful. But I'm very much looking forward to getting them back, because I do have projects that I want to work on with the drone, which I can't do until I get these.
Tell me, when you sent them, when you dispatched them all those months ago, were they charged?
They were in maintenance charge mode, which is basically a 50% charge.
I'd be very curious to see if they've held their charge in all that time.
Oh, they will have.
They will have.
They will have, yeah. The lithium batteries, if you put them in maintenance, they basically keep that charge until the end of time. Well, until the battery degrades to the point where it can't be used.
You were going to say until the end of time, which quite frankly could be.
Before I get them back.
Yes. There'll be the planet, the sun will have burnt itself out, but the batteries will still. And actually, technology may be so efficient that your two batteries, the day they're delivered and the sun finally extinguishes.
Well, my 24 batteries, actually.
24 batteries. Yeah, well, you know, technology may be so efficient, the entire planet can run off your 24 batteries, which have held their charge until then.
Indeed, yes.
Your batteries could be very significant in the future.
they'll stave off the heat death of the universe.
Yes. Now, you got back from Dubai, and rather than come back straight home from Dublin, where you flew into, and come back to the middle of nowhere where you live, and I should point out, in a very nice house in the middle of nowhere.
Quite enjoy being in the middle of nowhere.
keeps you away from people like me, anyway. You stayed in Dublin. Why did you stay in Dublin? What was going on in Dublin?
I stayed in Dublin. My good friend, Niall Murphy, who I've known since college, which is a scary 25 years, which I discovered when I was introducing him. But he's an amateur photographer. It's not his main business. He works in IT. And he and I actually got involved in photography around about the same time. We got interested in the early, like around 2001, 2000, in a serious way. And interestingly enough, actually, we started up my first commercial photography website was run in partnership with him. We, at a dinner, it would have been around 99 or 2000, no, sorry, 2002-ish, something like that. We discussed this idea that you could actually put your photographs up on a website and people might buy them, and how amazing that would be. And you could actually maybe make some money. You know, even at the time, you know, we weren't so naive to think that we would get rich or be able to make a living out of it, but at least that it would be some nice nice little thing on the side, and also that you would be able to share your photographs with a wider audience. So together we set up this website called South Bull Photography for the South Bull Wall in Dublin, which Niall has a particular affinity for. It's a long breakwater that extends out into Dublin Bay with a lighthouse on the end, and it's quite dramatic. And so we ran this site together, and then a couple of years later I decided that actually I wanted to really make a go of having a business that I could make a living from. And so I split off from that and started my own site. A very friendly split. There was no problem. And Niall has continued to operate South Bull to this day. And he has done a couple of things. He did people's photography a couple of times, and I think he had another exhibition, small exhibition. But he decided that he wanted to do something bigger. So he rented out a space in the CHQ building in Dublin and put together an exhibition of 50 of his photographs, which he called Edge Cases, which was basically a sort of a chronological series from very early on until the present day. And so I decided that I wanted to be around for that, and I wanted to help him launch it. So the launch was on the Thursday. I came back in on the Monday, so I had a couple of days to spend catching up with friends and family. And I also was helping Niall man the exhibition because it actually opened on the Monday, even though the opening wasn't until the Thursday for various silly reasons. But yeah, it was quite nice to be there. And again, it's sort of like with the workshop where I didn't have to organize it. You know, I mean, I did help him organize it, but it wasn't my exhibition, so it was all very relaxed and I could enjoy the process.
You say that though, but you have a bit of a profile. So there you are standing, you know, at this exhibition. I mean, did Niall, it would be like a lightning rod. If it were me, I'd be saying, look, Cox, get out. You're too well known. Just go away.
Yes, and unfortunately, there was an individual who came in, and I forget his name. I apologize if you're listening. And I think he worked in the area, and he's been actually following my photography for some time and has come into the gallery in Killarney. And he walked past the thing, and he saw me, and he recognized me. And he never met me. I guess he'd seen my picture. But he came in, and he introduced himself to me, and he was very enthusiastic. And it was lovely to see, you know. It's always nice when that kind of thing happens, but the context wasn't really right. And I think this person, I think they just saw me and they saw pictures and they assumed that it was my exhibition. So he walked in and he's talking about me and how much he likes my work. And I thought, this is great, but I'm sort of very aware that Niall is standing here. You know, this is Niall's exhibition. I said, well, look, I'm really here to support my friend Niall Murphy, who's an exhibitionist. And then he realized, you know, what was going on. So that was all fine, but it was a tiny bit awkward.
You could have said, do you know what? This print here is very special, very limited edition. Do you want to buy it? You could have been Niall's sales agent by proxy. It would have been completely honest.
Well, it's interesting because on the Thursday evening, Niall asked me, on the opening night, he asked me to introduce him before he gave his little talk. I said, of course, I'd be happy to. So I was sort of thinking about what I would say during the day. And then when the evening came and it was time to grab people's attention, I did. And I sort of went through, you know, that I'd known him for so long and enjoyed his photography and enjoyed seeing him develop. And then I made the point, because as a photographer who has run exhibitions and who sells his prints, I know how frustrating it is when people talk about how much they like your work, but then they don't buy it. And because it wasn't my exhibition and I'm just this guy that can say whatever the hell I want and it doesn't matter, so I say, you know, as a photographer, it's a lovely thing to have an exhibition of your photographs, and it's lovely to see people appreciate them. But you know, it's even better when people actually buy a print. And these are very so. And poor Niall was just going completely red. He was absolutely beatrice. But I like to think that it had a good effect, because he did make a good number of sales on the evening. So, and it's a very difficult thing to say. And if it was my exhibition, I would find that difficult to say, even though I've been doing this commercially for so long, because it just seems it's like this, you know, holding out your hands and please give me money.
But that's why you have people to do introductions. That's why you have compares and, you know, masters, because they can actually do introductions that somebody can't do for themselves.
Yeah.
So I think, so you did well. You did good. You helped a fellow photographer. So, or you may have created a competitor. Well done, you. That would be, yeah, my business is going brilliantly. And then I helped a friend and sales dropped dramatically. His business flourished.
Yes. He says he's going to be opening next door to me in 6 months' time. So,
Now, so I'm getting a sense of you that you might be changing from a cold human being to somebody who loves the heat. Actually, let me rephrase that.
Well, I called you AI.
You're very cold. No, it's because I've just realised you've been to Dubai, you didn't burn and you actually enjoyed it. Incredibly hot place. And now, by all accounts, you have opened a sauna business in your gallery. let's, as a final topic on this podcast, just talk about what you've done to the new gallery.
I've rendered it uninhabitable. So, yes.
I believe you me, there'll be people coming from the jungles of Thailand walking into your gallery, blast furnace though it is now, and they'll be in scarves and balaclavas complaining it's a bit cold in here. This is aside, my stepfather used to work on building sites in Iraq and Saudi Arabia, and all the people from the jungles of Southeast Asia would walk around in these countries with balaclavas and scarves on because they found it a bit chilly.
Reminds me of a story that Jerry O'Leary said. He lives in Dubai where it gets to be 50 degrees. And when I was out with him at dinner, you know, it was 23 degrees. It was beautiful, really nice weather. And I was just in sort of short sleeve top and he was in a long sleeve shirt. And he said, oh, I should have brought my coat. It's a bit chilly.
So he's acclimatized.
He's acclimatized very much.
But he must come home here and think, bloody hell, what's if we become part of the polar circle?
He does tell a story about coming back to Kerry and on a summer's day where it was about 22, 23 degrees and going into one of the local shops and the shopkeeper remembered him and says, oh, just sweltering heat, isn't it? He says, actually, I'm a bit chilly. He says, don't say that out loud, you'll be locked up.
So back to the gallery, yes. Which you've basically Jerry O'Leary-ified.
Kind of, yeah. So the gallery that I moved into at the end of September didn't actually have any heat at all in it, which is sort of a bit common in commercial premises in Killarney anyway. And I didn't think much about it at the time because it was summer and I had a lot of other things on my mind and it was kind of warm enough. But then as winter rolled in, it was obvious that something needed to be done. It needed to be warmed up. But there's literally no heating system at all, no form of heat. I brought in a couple of small little radiators, but they just couldn't cope. So I decided that I would get some proper heating put in. So I researched a bit and discovered that probably the best thing to do is to put in these ceiling-mounted radiators, for lack of a better term. They're basically panels that just radiate heat down into the gallery. They're very subtle, look quite nice. But I had no idea how much heat I needed to heat the space because it's a large space and it's open and then the door is open all the time. So I decided that I would enlist the help of an expert. Now, the mistake that I made was the expert that I enlisted the help from is somebody that sells these heaters. And so they said, well, you need six of them. You need at least six, was what they said. So I said, fair enough. And they gave me a recommendation for a particular model. And this heater, there's two different models. One is a higher BTU or stronger heater than the other. And he recommended the stronger one. So I said, fair enough. So I ordered them then from the local supplier. And the local supplier gives me an invoice which has the lower rated heater on them, six of them. And I said, well, actually, no, he recommended the other one. They said, oh, well, it's going to be a long wait for those. And we contacted the guy and he said, actually, no, the lower rated ones will be fine, which should have been my first clue that maybe the spec might have been a little bit more than was necessary. So anyway, I order six of these things and they get installed and I get a call then from my gallery manager, who is somebody that likes the cold. She doesn't like the heat. And she colorfully told me that she was feeling a bit warm. So when I went in, I was amazed. I was completely blasted out of it. And the thing is, I hadn't thought to order a thermostat because we had a heating system in the previous gallery, but they couldn't keep up. So even on a cold day, even with the thermostat set to its lowest setting of 17 degrees, I think, they never, ever got to that temperature. So the thermostat never kicked in, so they were just on all the time. And because of that, I thought, well, and a gear man had said minimum, blah, blah, blah. I decided I wouldn't need them. But by God, did I need a thermostat. So I have ordered one, but in fact, we only actually run two of the panels in the gallery at a time. So we have three times as much heat as we need.
There's a spike in the electricity.
Well, that's I don't know.
Are they electric?
They are electric. So, in fact, I think now with a thermostat, we can have all six on and they just click on and off as needed to keep the temperature where it is.
People would be thinking you're running Bitcoin mining hardware in your back office. The heat of this place. If people come to the gallery, they're not going to be cold, but what we're saying is, don't worry, you do not need to strip down into swimwear to come into the gallery.
It's entirely optional.
So,
no, we keep it at a nice, comfortable temperature now.
I think that's plenty for this episode, but we should finish by asking people, where can they keep up with you, find out about you? Where can they buy your prints? Because Peter sells prints and he sells books and he's far too modest to say this himself, obviously. So that's my role, is to say, buy Peter's prints, please.
And if you wish to do so, thank you, Rod. Then, of course, petercox.ie is where you go on the web, and the gallery is in Killarney. And of course, we did move all not too long ago. So we're on Plunkett Street now. But of course, if you go onto Google Maps, you'll certainly find us if you're in Killarney.
Just follow the people.
Follow the people.
Follow the stream of people who are, you know, either stripped down to their underwear or coming out with a really red glow. that's what you're looking for.
There you go.
Or just a glow in the sky. Skyline of Killarney.
Find a hotspot on the power grid. You know, where.
Very good. I've lost my train of thought now. You've told people where they can buy your stuff.
I've told people where they can buy my stuff, so we can sign off. And thank you very much for listening, guys. We will have another episode before too long. We've had, this is 5 episodes in nearly a year, so maybe we'll up the pace a little bit. But thanks for listening.